Another space race is in full swing as private space travel firms are competing with Russia, China, and the U.S. to push the envelopes of exploration on Mars and the Moon. China and Russia are taking part in a joint program to establish a permanent base on the Moon within 25 years, and Elon Musk's SpaceX has proposed building a colony on Mars by 2050. Many of these plans involve long-term travel and permanent colonization, and the sustainability of a human presence in space will eventually result in a need to procreate. But doing this in space poses many challenges, politically, ethically, and medically, and being born somewhere other than Earth raises citizenship questions, too. U of A astronomy professor Chris Impey recently wrote a piece for The Conversation about how soon we may see a baby born in space, and I spoke with him.
I think the time frame, it seems optimistic or aggressive, but with the NASA and Artemis collaboration, it really looks like we'll be going back to the moon in a couple of years, 2024, 2025. And so I think it's not unreasonable that a few decades after that, we'll have habitation on the moon.
This seems like something to be extremely excited about, enthusiastic about, because it is something new, but it's also would be so obviously unknown and unique at that point in time. Can you balance that out for us? How much of it is exciting because it's new, but also daunting because it hasn't been done?
Sure. It's exciting because sometimes we feel like we've not been moving forward in space. We're coming up on half a century since humans went to the moon. So it doesn't really feel like we've moved very quickly in that half century because it's expensive and it's very difficult. So it's exciting because we're going back in a few years. It's difficult because these are always dangerous adventures. And I'd add a third ingredient because I'm a sort of space booster or space fan. There's a significant set of people who say we shouldn't be doing this. You know, we have big problems on the Earth and this is a wasteful and expensive sideshow to be exploring space or living in space.
Address the current state of things for us from the standpoint that for a number of years, and you write about this, that the U.S. and Russia dominated space. Now we're seeing China, but also even more than that, many, many private companies. How does all of that potentially affect the scenario of what you're talking about over the next couple of decades about this unique individual being born?
I think it's the private sector that's been the game changer. We sort of forget that NASA's budget is actually, in real terms, 2 times lower than it was 20 years ago. So people expect NASA to do great things, but they don't have a lot of money. Russia is a kind of, you know, moderately wealthy country relying on old technology. The new country in play is China with very ambitious plans. And the private sector is the big game changer because, you know, we have essentially the two richest people in the world, Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk, each with a private space company, each putting substantial fractions of their personal fortunes into this adventure, along with other space companies.
Can we have expectations that the first baby could actually be conceived in space? Is that something we end up with a pregnant female heading up? How do you see that?
Yeah, that's possible. I mean, there are two scenarios, and one will take longer than the other. We're going to have a lot of Earth orbit action in the next decade or so, and that includes orbiting space hotels, long-term stays for fairly wealthy people. And so I, in practical terms, imagine the first baby being born off Earth will probably be born in Earth orbit in one of these long-term residence facilities and possibly for the whole period of the pregnancy and birth. For a baby to be born on the moon is a much more intimidating prospect because you need medical infrastructure. You need a viable colony before you'd even consider having children in that situation. So that's going to take quite a lot longer.
What are some, if any, bioethical questions that come to mind for you there?
Well, there are huge ethical questions. And one of the interesting things people forget is that space is essentially the Wild West. It's pretty much unregulated. So when the private sector moves in, you know, they're sort of loosely under the umbrella of the FAA in the US extended into space, but really there are very few rules. So any sort of ethical, biomedical issues, you know, have to be dealt with by these companies. They have to, you know, take ownership of these issues because I don't think there's anyone going to be telling them what they can and can't do.
When you mention Wild Wild West, would it be irresponsible for this to be something where we just sort of see what happens? You know, with not educated guesses further than that, of course, but is there a matter of when it's something unique like this, we can't prepare for everything, I suppose?
No, we can't. And the precedent for what's happening in space with private sector is really what happened in the 1930s with the beginning of civil aviation. Flying commercially in the 1920s or the 30s was extremely expensive and fairly risky. And it only eventually became a mass market thing, and that took decades. So the space program is in the same area where it is going to be risky. People will die, and that's just unfortunately the case. So these risks will be accepted by the people who are willing to do it, and these companies that are putting their money into it are also willing to fail. They're risking their capital.
How viable do you think it is, and how likely is it that we, as humans, actually inhabit another planet in a true way, in the next 50 to 60 years?
I think in a self-sustaining way, where it's not just people coming out for a few years at a time and then returning, I think it will be 40 or 50 years, because that requires a lot of infrastructure to be set up. And also, I make a pretty strong distinction between the moon and Mars. The moon, in terms of travel distance and time, is 100 times closer than Mars. So Mars is a much more formidable undertaking to set up a colony, to supply it. To get off Mars and come home if something goes wrong, the radiation exposure on the way there and back. So Mars is going to take longer. The moon will happen first because we'll have to learn a lot of the same lessons to live on the moon as we will need to learn to live on Mars as well.
Does the motivation matter, whether it's about exploration or because we need to find another place to live?
I think the motivation matters. It matters more, of course, when governments are involved, because that's taxpayers' money. So I think the American people or other countries, they have a right to say, we don't want our money to be spent on this. We'd rather deal with hunger, with poverty. But when the private sector is, building the capital themselves and spending it, then they sort of have a right to do that. And I think they will. So their motivations could be quite different. And of course, they have to have a commercial motivation. They're not just doing it for pure adventurism or for the spirit of curiosity about what it's like to live off-world. Musk and Bezos, they have pretty viable business models based on recreation and tourism, initially very high-end and then eventually working into the mass market. So the motivations will vary, I think. Governments tend to do this also for mixed motives too. It's been geopolitical for much of the history of the space race. It's been a fierce competition between the United States and Russia. Now there's a competition between the United States and China, so even the country's motivations vary over time.
That is University of Arizona astronomy professor Chris Impey.